Hi friends, happy Friday! Welcome to Friends of France Friday. Wow, it feels both weird and bittersweet that this would be the last time I'll be saying that short intro. Well, at least for now. Welcome to the 24th and the episode finale of the podcast's third season. Wow, my heart is so full and my mind is so overwhelmed. I cannot believe that this season is finally over. This season has been my creative project and outlet and passion baby for the past year and a half. Insane. I started blueprinting the season, figuring out the roster of the expert guest and finalizing the theme, etc. around December 2022. Then I recorded our first episode with Dr. Shelley Rockwell back in February 2023, recorded the last episode in August of 2023, and officially released the season with the first episode on December 1st, 2023. It's now June 14th, 2024. 28 weeks later since the first episode officially released, and we have made it. My heart is so full. Thank you, everyone, for all of your support. I cannot believe that almost 4 years and 3 seasons later, we have reached over 21,000 all-time unique downloads and listeners in over 100 countries and on 7 continents. We reached Antarctica. I don't know how, did they even have access to Spotify or Apple or YouTube or the internet? But anyway, one of the penguins has listened, for sure, maybe somewhere down in the iceberg. But thank you for all of your support. It means so much. And thank you for being here in the last day of the season. I am so excited for all of you to learn about such an important topic, a very crucial one. And I have the best person joining us today to teach us all about it. Cancer. Definitely a word no one likes hearing. We had an episode back in season 2 with Dr. Sanjay Juneja, an oncologist and hematologist, and he talked to us about a book by an oncologist called The Emperor of All Maladies. And it's true, of all diseases, cancer is really the one that horrifies people the most. Unfortunately, it is something that runs in my family. My father died from malignant lymphoma, my maternal grandmother passed away from acute leukemia, I have a distant aunt who passed away from ovarian cancer. Today, we're talking about a specific cancer that is actually ranked as the most common cancer worldwide, breast cancer. According to the American Cancer Society, breast cancer is also the most common cancer in women in the United States, except for skin cancers. It accounts for about 30% of all new female cancers each year. Overall, the average risk of a woman in the United States developing breast cancer sometime in her life is about 13%. This means that there is a 1 in 8% chance she will develop breast cancer. But definitely, men can also get breast cancer, though rare, with an average lifetime risk of about 1 in 726. Breast cancer is also the second leading cause of cancer death in women, secondary to lung cancer. When it comes to breast cancer, there is so much education needed because there is so much misinformation we can find online. And today, we have Dr. Robin Roth to talk all about it. Dr. Roth is a board-certified diagnostic radiologist who is fellowship-trained in breast and abdominal imaging, women's imaging fellowship director, assistant professor of radiology, and the founder of The Boobie Docs, a renowned social media platform and podcast where she discusses breast cancer and breast health in an educational and fun way. From the BRCA gene and genetic mutations, to monthly breast self-examination, mammograms and the BI-RADS score, to the Tyrer-Cuzick risk assessment calculator, the horrifying official breast cancer diagnosis, and the next steps of chemotherapy and surgery, we tackle it all. This episode is both science and heart. I hope you not only get to learn a lot from it, but you will also be encouraged to advocate for your own health, especially breast health. As Dr. Roth says in the episode, early detection is the breast protection. Have a great day, everyone.
Hello.
Hello, Dr. Roth. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good. I am loving the background over there.
It's so
fitting for our conversation tonight.
I was going to say, hi, Titan. This is my friend,
I have Titan here. It's not a BB.
That will do.
You know, I was looking at my calendar, and it's so crazy how the Chloe event that we first saw each other was exactly a month ago, July 22nd.
So
it's just right that we are both here. I've been so excited for our episode recording. Thank you so much for joining me. It's such an honor. If you could first please introduce yourself to everyone, to our future listeners. Thank you.
Sure. Hi, breasties. So my name is Dr. Robin Ross. I am a breast radiologist. So that means that I am the doctor who would interpret any of your breast imaging studies, so like mammograms, ultrasounds, or MRIs. I'm also the doctor that you would meet if any of those were abnormal. And I'm the doctor that in many cases gives a cancer diagnosis. So it's a really important job that I love and I feel so honored to be as part of my career. Most people know me as the Booby Docs, which is my popular social media platform, and just my podcast, and essentially my whole personality is at this point. And it's something I'm just so passionate about. And it's a way I've combined my passion for early detection and breast cancer awareness to a younger generation through social media and doing what I love, which is breast radiology.
Wow, I love it. So beautiful. I mean, you're right, such an important field, and it's something that we'll continue to talk about as this conversation goes on. But I wanted to first talk about your whole journey into the field of medicine in itself, right? It's such I've been working in healthcare for several years now, and medicine is like overflowing of just so many beautiful and just bewildering and crazy things, right? What was the first inspiration of you in pursuing this field? Was it a family member, a friend, a personal experience?
So it's a great question. And I kind of fell into medicine, I think, by fate. You know, growing up, I never really thought of myself as a math and science kid. I always loved writing. I really wanted to pursue a career in journalism. I was editor of my high school newspaper, and I even wrote in college. And I really had all intentions of going to college for journalism. Mm-hmm. And as a child, I had growth hormone deficiency, actually. Mm-hmm. And I took growth hormone shots. And that's something that I kind of, when I was in my teen years, that was pretty instrumental getting my self-confidence and just knowing who I am. So I always wanted to do this journalism track. And then, I don't know, I went to University of Florida. I was in a huge auditorium with all these incoming freshmen. And they were like, who here is going to be pre-med? And I don't even know what came over me, but I raised my hand like everybody else. And my parents looked at me like, what? I thought you were going to do journalism. And I said, you know what? I love Dr. Nemery, who was my endocrinologist growing up. And why not? You know, I kind of took it as a challenge. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because my dad, at this orientation at University of Florida, he goes, you're going to be on the Today Show one day. I could see you as like a medical consultant. And honestly, like, that's my ultimate dream job of like combining medical journalism and what I do now. So I kind of fell into it. I didn't get weeded out. Yeah. And in terms of, I mean, specifically breast radiology, that is very personal to me, which I don't know if you want me to go into.
Yes, please. Yeah.
So I went through University of Florida and I ended up going to Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx, New York, which was an amazing experience. It was really the first time I ever left Florida. So that was, you know, huge for me. And also, I always thought I wanted to be a pediatrician. And then in the back of my mind, when I was in med school, my cousins were diagnosed with breast cancer in their 30s. And then they ended up testing positive for the BRCA2 mutation. I mean, this was like 15 years ago. They're happy to report they're doing amazing. But in the back of my mind, I always kind of knew I wanted to help women like them. And then radiology, I kind of fell into because, again, when you're going through medicine and you're kind of seeing what feels right, I knew I took things home with me. So I kind of wanted to be one step removed from patients directly, which is ultimately kind of what drove me into radiology, which is such an amazing field. And I'm so happy I fell into that. Mm-hmm. And then breast radiology was a natural transition. So
Such a beautiful story into medicine. I think it's just like a confirmation that sometimes the very difficult things that we go through, right, like kind of leads the way and paves the way into where we should be or what we should do that we don't think or we didn't realize that we would do. Totally. Right.
I think by listening to what brings you joy and like what really makes you tick or gets you excited is important because I feel like if I would have followed the path that I thought I was going to take, like I might've been, you know, writing for a newspaper and unhappy, or I might've been a pediatrician and really not fulfilled, and mm-hmm. just the way that I kind of ebbed and flowed and kind of took signs from the universe about what yeah. my next step should be is pretty amazing and powerful. My husband's a radiologist too, actually, and we work together, and we grew up in South Florida, and we met up here in residency. So it's,
I mean, if that's not fate, then I don't know what it is, right? I mean,
right.
Sorry, what else it is? I mean, despite how beautiful the field of medicine is, and I can't imagine the fulfillment, the gravity of reward and satisfaction that you feel, you know, helping people, the path to where you are now was definitely not easy, right? Especially in the United States, the medical route is so long, the education, the training, with all the entailed sacrifices and the twists and turns, you know, the things that you don't expect. Given through all of that, do you have any regrets in pursuing the field and being a breast radiologist now?
Absolutely none. Like, absolutely none. I wish I could have told my, like, younger self, it's going to mm-hmm. be okay. You're going to find a job, a career mm-hmm. that you love. And, mm-hmm. and being able to take that outside of the reading room has also been important, because I think about 10 years into my career as a radiologist, a few years ago, I was really feeling unfulfilled. Like, I think going through medicine, you're always like aiming for the next goal. Like, mm-hmm. what is the next step? And like, once you become an attending, there's like no more steps, yeah. right? Like, you've actually done it. And you're like, what next? And then you start thinking about, like, who am I? Like, I had 3 kids during residency and fellowship. Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of lose yourself going through training somewhat. And, like, for me, really sitting, like, I always knew I wanted to write. There was a part of me that always wanted to create. And even, like, the way I came up with, you know, the booby dog was really just listening to myself and doing some self-reflection about, like, who I am and what makes me tick and what gets me excited. Like, I knew I wanted to start a social media account, but I didn't know, like, what to do. Was I a mom? Was I a doctor? I started my Instagram account in 2018. It was Dr. Robin Ross. I know, really creative. And, like, my first picture was, like, me, a selfie in front of a reading, like, the workstation. And, like, you know, it was, like, the beginning of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I was, you know, I could even see how unconfident I am back in that post. And I really sat on it for 2 years. I did nothing with it. And then, like, one late night while breastfeeding my child, like my third kid during the pandemic, I realized I was surrounded by boobs all day. And I was like, oh my God, the booby doc.
Yeah.
And actually, I say doc. My name is actually the booby doc, plural, because for a while, I mean, talk about cosmically connected. My best friend from day one of med school is a breast radiologist too. We work together, and I know, not by chance, like, she was the one who brought me here in the first place. And I was like, we're going to do this together. Like, we can talk directly to the audience. Like, we're 40 year old women, we're best friends. And we did that together for about a year and a half. And that was really when it kind of took off and I found my voice. And then she ended up leaving social media because her father got sick and ultimately passed from cancer. So she left. But I keep the S because, you know, I took some time off. I really evaluated where I'm going. And I'm like, no, I love collaborating. Yeah. I am multi-personality, like, you know, I've got multiple sides to me. And it just felt like it made sense. So
yeah,
that's how the booby docs and my social media kind of came about and the natural evolution.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I mean, I can just feel the emanating passion that you have, not just for boobs, but, you know, just breast health in general, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what is it about breast science and breast medicine? And I guess we can even deep dive in more specifically in your job, right? Mm-hmm. Breast imaging, women's imaging, what is it all about? I know you gave a hint of it earlier. What is it all about? And why is it so special to you that, you know, you even created the breast imaging fellowship in an academic institution?
Yeah, so great question. So breast imaging, you know, as a breast radiologist, we use a combination of the technology we have right now to figure out what is going on in your breast. And I'm going to use this to talk about it as a moment about just, like, what recommendations are. But, you know, typically we start screening the average population, the average risk population, and that's an important keyword, average risk population with mammograms starting at age 40. But we know that there is a subset of people that need breast cancer screening much earlier. So we would want to start about, you know, 10 years before a first degree relative, and even as early as starting at age 30. And then also, if you're high risk, we'd want to start adding MRI even as early as age 25. But really, for the typical person, we start with a mammogram. If you have dense breast tissue, we use ultrasound and MRI so we could see through that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that, you know, mammograms get a lot of bad press out there because it's an imperfect technology, but it's getting better. And we know that, like, when we add ultrasound and MRI onto that, then we're able to see much more and be much more sensitive. And we're using much more of a risk stratified approach. Mm-hmm. So really trying to identify high risk women earlier. Mm-hmm. I want to actually point out some important article that came up within the past week. So recently in JAMA, it came out that just cancer in young people is on the rise, mm-hmm. particularly in the 30 to 39 year old women. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a rise in breast cancer as well as GI malignancies and endocrine tumors. And this is important for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. We don't exactly know why it is affecting this population much more, but it's like, it's 19% higher in the 30 to 39 year old group over a 10-year period, which is alarming. We don't exactly know why that is at this point. Like, there's probably a number of factors which we could talk about, but it really just emphasized the importance of screening, you know, early and taking women's complaints about their breasts seriously, and also appreciating when women are proactive and want to get that mammogram starting at 40 or even earlier if they have risk factors for breast cancer.
Yes.
Ever since I was a child, my inner arms and neck would always suffer from itchiness and irritation whenever I would sweat. It can become so debilitating, forcing myself not to scratch my skin and end up with wounds from prickly heat, especially at night. Thankfully, I have found relief through By Dr. Mom's Soothing Beta Cream and Soothing Bed Treatment, which uses barley-derived beta-glucan technology to help alleviate eczema, bug bites, and dry, itchy, irritated skin. Beta-glucan is a fiber shown in scientific studies to improve skin hydration and healing, and By Dr. Mom's products extract it with a technique that uses air technology, requiring no chemicals or solvents. Created by family physician Dr. Stephanie Liu with the help of an allergist and immunologist, you can now allow your skin to breathe and heal naturally. Using the code CHRISTIAN10, that's CHRISTIAN10, you can get 10% off your first order on buydrmom.com. As a healthcare worker, my identity can become so boxed within the pressures and expectations of my profession that sometimes I forget who I really am outside the hospital walls. This is why I find so much power and liberation in self-expression through fashion and accessories. And Lupin seeks to do the same. Encouraging self-confidence and creating a safe space to be yourself, Lupin seeks to share with the world simple and impactful jewelry pieces that can bring confidence effortlessly. Meaning what goes around comes around, the brand, comprised of third-generation jewelers, holds a mission to brighten the community by promoting positivity and a growth mindset. Lupin's clean designs are handcrafted in South Korea using 925 sterling silver, and can go with almost any outfit on anyone. In fact, I wear my pieces on and off shift. With the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, you can get 15% off your first order on lupin.com. Let's bring more luster into the world, together with Lupin. I remember coming home every day from elementary school and smelling the newly steamed jasmine rice in the cooker that my grandmother made just in time for dinner. It reminded me of my first few years living on the farm back home in Asia, sniffing the rice while overlooking the fields. Founded in 2020, Bison Candle Co. hand-pours nostalgic and iconic scented soy wax candles inspired by the Asian scents, flavors, and traditions that founder Brandon Leung grew up with in his first-generation Chinese-American household. Brandon's mission with Bison is to create authentic Asian aromas while rediscovering his love of his Chinese culture and heritage. The candles and home fragrances celebrate aromatic Eastern flavors and aromas one would typically find in an Asian kitchen or pantry, like Vietnamese coffee, steamed white rice, and white peach. Enjoy traditional scents alongside some modern spin-off blends and be taken back into the beauty of the motherland with the code BAISUNFRANZ, that's BAISUNFRANZ, for 15% off your first order at BAISUNCANDLECO.com.
I mean, this is one of the reasons why I started the podcast, right? Is there's so much misinformation and fear-mongering and
oh, yeah.
just like so much debates online from people who have no expertise in a specific topic, right?
Yeah.
And misinformation can definitely cost lives, right? And so I was like, why don't we bring in the actual experts to talk about their fields, where they were educated, where they are trained, and one of those is you in this field, yeah. right? And you've said so many amazing information, Doc. And I guess I wanted to bring it back to the rudimentary talk where even the general public may not know much about, right? Breast cancer in itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a breast cancer awareness month. We see pink in 1 month and the symbol in so many places. How pressing of an issue is it in, I guess, nationally and internationally? And do we know the known causes for breast cancer?
No, I mean, breast cancer is the most common mm-hmm. cancer worldwide. Mm-hmm. So, and there, like we said, there's a young breast cancer epidemic going on. Mm-hmm. Actually, in the recent article that I mentioned, even though the numbers were small, the highest mm-hmm. rate of increase was in Asian mm-hmm. / Pacific Islander and Hispanic women. So it is an important thing. And breast cancer disparities is huge, mm-hmm. right? So we don't know, there's probably not one thing that's mm-hmm. causing breast cancer. It's probably multifactorial. We know that there's lifestyle factors like obesity, alcohol, smoking, mm-hmm. sedentary lifestyle, some of these things that they pointed out in the article, poor sleep, mm-hmm. all those things. And then, and of course, environmental things like carcinogens and pollutants in the air, in the environment. I mean, we know that there are clusters of people that either are connected by some geographic location. So obviously something's going on and it's really scary. So I just really encourage anyone listening to, you know, do a monthly self-breast exam, talk to your doctor about breast cancer risk factors. We should be having that conversation before the age of 30, mm-hmm. ideally by age 25, so that we could identify people that are high risk. Mm-hmm. And also be your own breast advocate. Like if you feel something that feels off or doesn't feel right, you always have to bring it to the attention of your doctor yeah. and make sure that your concerns are being taken seriously. Mm-hmm. If you feel like they're not being taken seriously, then it might be time to find another doctor.
Yeah, definitely. And I wanted to point out, you mentioned several times about being high risk for breast yes. cancer. And as a doctor, what do you classify as high risk? Is it like genetics, like family members?
No. And so that's a great conversation piece. So mm. most people that are diagnosed are actually not at high risk. They have no known family history or genetic mutation. However, we know that high risk individuals are more likely to develop breast cancer. So when I say high risk, what I'm saying is greater than 20% lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. And so this is important. One of the newer recommendations is that everyone have a breast cancer risk assessment by age 30 mm-hmm. with your doctor, mm-hmm. ideally starting at age 25. But obviously that's not realistic. It's also, most doctors aren't even aware of this recommendation. So you could do it yourself, you know, instead of getting mad at your doctor for not doing this with you. I encourage people to just do it themselves. So you can Google something called the Tyrer-Cuzick calculator. So Tyrer-Cuzick calculator. You could basically plug in your age, your weight, your height. Mm-hmm. It might ask you some family history. If you know it, you plug it in and things like that. When your first period was, mm-hmm. how many children you had, if you ever breastfed, things like that. And it will actually give you your breast cancer risk over your lifetime and in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. So it's an important number that we're starting to talk about more about. Average risk for, you know, 1 in 8, about 12 to 13% is average risk. I'm considered intermediate. I'm about 15% when you plug it in. Mm-hmm. High risk would be over 20%. And those are the people that we really want to identify because they're the ones that want to start mammography early as age 30 and MRIs early as age 25.
Got it. And super.
See a genetic counselor.
Yeah. Too. See a genetic counselor. Yeah. We mentioned mammogram, right? We're talking about screenings yeah. and being on top of things. We had Dr. Sally Choi a few weeks ago, who's a diagnostic radiology resident. So we touched mm-hmm. upon, you know, different types of scans. Talk about CT scans, MRI, PET scans. And in this topic, I really wanted to be a more specialized talk about mammograms.
Sure.
What exactly is it? How does it differ from a CT scan, from an MRI?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's a lot of misinformation out there about mammograms. So let's talk about it. So mammograms are essentially X-rays of your breast. Okay. So the same way you get a chest X-ray, things are black and white, or, you know, shades, 50 shades of black and white. Same thing with a mammogram. And it's very low dose. Mm-hmm. A mammogram is equivalent to about living in the world for about 7 days that you would get from background radiation. So I want to dispel any myths that, you know, mammograms are high dose, they cause cancer. I don't think you could claim that mammograms cause cancer. Right now, they're the gold standard for breast cancer detection. Mammography is going to get way better through artificial intelligence and contrast mammography and lots of other things. So CT is much higher dose. It's computed tomography. I don't really know how to explain it on the physics level to the to your viewers. Yeah. But so essentially, so when we do a mammogram of your breast, it's using x-rays. We do 3D mammography, which is like a 3D mammogram of your breast. So it kind of looks like you're scrolling through a CT scan when you're going through the breast. So the problem with the black and white is that, you know, dense breast tissue appears white and breast cancers often appear white. So that's what we're talking about, dense breast tissue, that it makes it harder to see breast cancer on mammography. Because think of it like finding a snowflake in a blizzard. Mm-hmm. Right. So the more white, dense tissue you have, the harder it is to find breast cancer using mammography alone. Mm-hmm. That's where ultrasound and MRI helps us. So those use different kinds of things. Ultrasound uses sound waves and MRI uses magnetic fields and they create very different images in the breast and in the body. And they're all used for different things at this point.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, someone comes to you for the first time. So yeah. Dr. Roth, I finally decided to get my mammogram.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like online, there's especially Reddit forums and on WhatsApp news or or like Facebook newsfeed, I think there's really a lot of talks about, oh, it's painful. Oh, it's or that. I obviously can't talk about that because I will never get a mammogram. But first, a patient comes to you newly. It's like, doc, I'm ready to get my first mammogram.
Right.
Can you take us through the process of when would expect from beginning to the end of these scans?
Sure. That's a great question. So yeah, I think mammograms need better PR. I'm happy.
It's a PR agent.
That's me. You know, they obviously are uncomfortable. I can now speak from experience because I've had two of them now that I'm 41. But they're, you know, they're really, I would say that it's mild to moderate discomfort. There are things that you could do to minimize your pain level, like taking Advil 30 minutes to an hour before your exam. Also trying to schedule your mammogram when you are not like immediately around your period, ideally like 7 to 10 days after when you're less tender. Mm-hmm. But you know, even if you pick the worst day of the month to get it, I think it's still tolerable for most people. And it really depends on the patient and the technologist also. But yeah, the technologist will take essentially two views of each breast using an x-ray machine, and it's, you know, slightly uncomfortable. They press it in a few different directions. And then usually after they're done, if it's a screening mammogram, you go home, you get your results in the mail. It's available to your doctor within 3 days and you get a report within 30 days. If there was, some places offer like same day reads, so they might let you know if, you know, if it's normal or abnormal. Mm-hmm. So about 10% of people get called back from the mammogram. And the number is higher if it's your first mammogram because we have nothing to compare it to. Mm-hmm. And you're more likely to have dense breast tissue. So if you get called back from your mammogram, especially if it's your first, don't freak out. It does not mean you have cancer. Of the 10% that get called back, so 10 women out of 100 women get called back. So then they get something called diagnostic imaging. So where the technologists will be taking additional pictures of the breast with a mammogram, they might need to get an ultrasound as well. At the end of that, you meet with a radiologist, or the radiologist will give you results on that day. So that's considered a diagnostic exam. And basically, there's a few different options. So they might tell you that everything is normal. Okay, so about out of the 10 women that get called back, 6 of them will be told that everything is normal. There's nothing to worry about. It's not cancer. Another 2 of those women will be told it's probably benign. That means that it's less than 2% chance of that being cancer. And we typically follow that every 6 months for 2 years. And there's specific things that fall into that category. And then the third option, about 2 of those women will need a biopsy. And even when we recommend a biopsy, that's considered a BI-RADS 4 or 5. Most of the BI-RADS 4, so when I say BI-RADS, at the end of your breast imaging report, you get something called a breast imaging reporting and data system code. So your BI-RADS code. So if we give you a 4 or 5, that means that you need a biopsy. BI-RADS 4 means that it's anywhere between 2 to 95% chance of that being anything to worry about. So most likely, about 80% of those are going to be benign. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if we tell you it's a category 5, that means it's highly suspicious. It means based on our imaging, you know, our imaging, we're very worried that this is cancer. If it's not cancer, we're probably going to recommend it get taken out anyways. So, you know, we'll start setting you up maybe with to meet with a surgeon and getting the biopsy quicker. Mm-hmm. So that's like the general thing to understand from getting a mammogram. But like I said, 90% of women who get their mammograms off the bat will be told it's normal. And of the 10% women that get called back, you know, the numbers are very small for it to ultimately be, you know, malignancy. But, you know, it is important to just, you know, talk to the radiologist, see what they're worried about and why they're recommending biopsy.
Thank you so much for that super helpful information. But, you know, if we play this out to the general public, right?
Yeah.
Even if we say that, oh, you know, a great part of it may be benign.
Yeah.
People will stick to that small percentage of it might be me, right? Can you take me back to, as the physician, as the one who reads all of this and talks to the patients about, you know, obviously such heartbreaking and horrific news, take me to that space where you tell the patient, oh, you know, actually, like, these are the next steps. How does that feel for you as the physician?
I feel it's definitely something that it's a skill that I'm constantly working on. I've been out of practice now for 10 years and I could like almost remember almost every conversation. And like some of the, you know, I always sit down, take a moment to really just sit on that, this, and the fact that I'm going to give someone the worst news of their life and kind of like honor that and just, you know, put myself in their shoes and make sure, you know, that I'm doing this, taking the time and, you know, answering all their questions. I often look in their chart to see if anyone's spoken to them or is this completely, you know, catching them off guard. When I'm having the conversation that something needs a biopsy, if I am really suspicious, I'm going to say, you know, I am really concerned about this just based on how it looks. I think honesty, I think I really try to feel the patient and see where they're at. Either way, they're going to get the rug pulled out from underneath them, especially if it's, you know, I'm giving someone a category 5, highly suspicious for being cancer. You know, I just say, whatever it is, we're going to help you get through this. We're going to get you the best healthcare team and you're going to get through this, you know, whatever this is. And I feel so fortunate that I get to help someone through one of, you know, the worst times of their life. I often think about, you know, many radiologists are not known for their bedside manners. So I feel fortunate that like I've developed one over time. And, you know, I really tried to empathize with the patient as much as I can. And like, my heart breaks when I get this news too. So, you know, that doesn't get easy.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, just to imagine like someone getting the most horrific news of their life, right? Mm-hmm. And many of these probably have families, right? Only the thoughts of, oh, what will happen to my family or what will happen to me? Or, you know, the next stages of maybe mastectomy or chemotherapy. There's such a lot of things involved in such a journey, right? How have you seen the patients, now that we've talked of how you deal with it, how have you seen patients to react to those news?
Well, I always tell patients, like, write down your questions. You're going to have a million. Don't Google everything because it's slippery slope. And there's a lot of, like you said, misinformation out there. And every breast cancer is very different. And your treatment is very individualized. So what one person might have had as their breast cancer treatment does not mean that will dictate what your experience will be, you know, even with the medications, the side effects, everything like that. I really just encourage people to, you know, process the information. Like I said, write down as many questions as they think of and always, whenever possible, bring someone to appointments because, you know, when you're dealing with something like cancer, a lot of things I tell you in this moment, you're not going to remember, right? And you're not going to remember to ask these things. So it's always important when you can to bring a companion or someone that, you know, can take notes and say, no, the doctor said this, this is the plan. And just, you know, have an advocate, if not your, in addition to yourself, like you have to be your own best advocate, but also have a friend or family member or someone that can really help you navigate through these, you know, difficult topics. And, you know, I was the one giving the news, but I often wondered what happened to my patients and what was next. And that actually inspired me to start my podcast. So I have a podcast called The Girlfriend's Guide to Breast Cancer, Breast Health and Beyond. And it actually started like this as an Instagram live format. And me and my best friend, Adrian, would talk to, you know, inspiring people in the breast cancer community, doctors, advocates, thrivers, and ask them like what the most important questions, how they got through this, what was their experience like? Just because the more we talk about this, the more you know, we're getting this information to people who need it. Yep. So now through my podcast, I've been able to, you know, put that in perpetuity. So I'm really happy about that. So it really is a great resource for anyone who's been newly diagnosed with breast cancer or someone they love. I always tell people, I hope you never need my podcast, but it's there if you do.
Yeah, I love it. I think in those moments, it's so easy to feel alone, right? Mm-hmm. Like the whole world is against me and it's just me. So I love that you have your podcast too. Probably a virtual hug to people, right? A virtual companion to people, like, oh, they've gone through this too. You know, not everyone's experience, no one's experience ever is the same as another's, but just knowing that you are not alone and that people have gone through it and that we develop maybe the resources or the mechanisms to be able to go through that, right?
Totally. Yeah. I actually want to speak on that because the breast cancer community online is incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, after starting my Instagram, I started connecting with the breast cancer community, and they always say worst club, best members. And I agree with that. And just I've learned so much from interacting with organizations like the Breasties. Mm-hmm. And there's just so many incredible organizations, incredible advocates out there that have either had breast cancer or providers or someone that has a genetic predisposition for a cancer. I never even heard that word until I joined Instagram and joined the breast cancer community and, you know, thrivers or someone who's been affected by breast cancer. So just everyone's welcome. It's such a, you know, amazing organization, just an incredible community of breast cancer people. So, you know, when I say don't Google, I do not mean don't find people on social media, because I think that's where real connections are made and where people find, you know, I think breast cancer, so many people have been affected by it. And so it really is important to find people that you connect with that have gone through similar life situations and got through it and gotten stronger.
Yeah, definitely. On the other side. I feel like an antithesis to that, though, is there's a subset to the population and even outside of, you know, the breast world, breast cancer, where they're like, oh, I'm not going to get this test. I'm not going to get this mammogram specifically because I don't want to.
Yeah.
It's better for me not to know. As a physician, as a breast expert, what would be your message to this subset of people? It's like, I'd rather not know.
Okay. Ignorance is not bliss. Early detection is a breast protection, right? There is really a huge advantage to finding your breast cancer early. Like the earlier stage we could find it, like if we could find it before it's in your lymph nodes or before it's palpable, then we could possibly avoid chemotherapy, which leads to less time off of work, which leads to less, like, you know, the benefits are endless. So the earlier that we can get your breast cancer diagnosed and your treatment minimized and get you back to your normal life, the better. So I really think I encourage people to do their annual mammograms, annual being a key word, because even that's debatable. Which really it's not, because, you know, breast cancer, especially in young women, we know that young women are more likely to get breast cancers in a interval breast cancers, so in between mammograms. And it's because for a number of reasons. So that's why annual mammography is really important, especially in young women.
In this world of social media that places so much physical critique and pressure on maintaining a youthful appearance against all environmental odds, the skincare and beauty industries have succumbed to a myriad of anti-aging practices. However, the covert fact is that beauty is timeless and that aging is a privilege. Regents, an inclusive wellness brand, seeks to promote this ritual of well-aging, understanding that it is connectivity with the body and attentive care given to it as it changes, including our skin. Founded by Filipino-American Gilio Rizzio, Regents introduces the all-encompassing serum, created to target the concerns of maturing melanated skin by utilizing a blend of healing botanicals used by our ancestors and select clinically proven active ingredients. From the brightening Ayurvedic licorice root to the soothing Centella Asiatica and hydrating green algae, welcome to the journey of fueling skin health and enhancing, not changing, your natural shade. With the code FRANZ, that's FRANZ, you can get 15% off your first order on regentswellness.com. Experience the power of mixing native wisdom with modern day science. Do you have any guilty pleasures?
I have one. Boba. Given that the average cafe-made milk tea has over 100 calories per serving, over 20 grams of high glycemic sugar, and is packed with artificial flavors, I am so glad that the guilty days are over with Twirl. the world's first canned plant-based milk tea. With only 45 to 50 calories per serving and containing 6 to 7 grams of low glycemic sweeteners, Twirl is made with pea milk, the most sustainable plant-based milk on the market, regenerating the soil where it comes from. Fair trade and organic are the names of the game, as the teas are sourced from biodiverse family farms in China, Japan, and Taiwan that practice sustainable farming techniques. No artificial flavors are ever used. From 4 different flavors to ready-to-eat plant-based konjac and boba pearls, let's enjoy tasty, creamy, shelf-stable, and healthy milk tea together for 10% off using the code FRANZ10, that's FRANZ10, on twirlmilktea.com. Twirl around in its goodness. Growing up, I was ashamed of my Asian heritage. Classmates would comment about the lunch my grandma cooked, other kids would make fun of my eyes, and even some adults today would tell me to go back to where I came from. But where do I really belong? Who really am I? Am I not American enough? Highlighting the year of the first documented arrival of Asian Americans in North America, 1587 Sneakers seeks to shine the spotlight on Asian American stories and demonstrate to the world the extraordinary breadth of our passions and achievements. Made with full-grain natural Italian leather by footwear artisans, 100% biodegradable natural rubber outsole, calf leather interior lining for comfort and good smells, and wax cotton laces for longer lasting cleanliness, these premium sneakers combine the highest quality, an array of timeless designs, and the movement to be authentically who you are. With the code FRANZ15, that's lowercase FRANZ15, you can get 15% off your first order on 1587sneakers.com. Step into embracing your identity without hiding. Express yourself unapologetically.
Medicine, we have kind of the saying that, right, like prevention is better than cure, better than actually treating it. And I think you mentioned being palpable, right? And we also mentioned about breast self-exams. Can you take us through to what a breast self-exam is? Like, what should one be looking for?
I would love to, Chris. You know, so it's funny because, you know, when we talk about even just misinformation, even the self-breast exam, the American Cancer Society does not support, which is ludicrous to me. And it's something I'm really outspoken about, because about 80% of young women who are diagnosed with breast cancer find the abnormality themselves. Let that sink in for a second. Okay, 80% of young women who are diagnosed with breast cancer find their breast cancer themselves. So I always encourage everyone, especially young women, to do a monthly self-breast exam. Ideally, we would do it on days 7 to 10 of the menstrual cycle, but who is able to keep up with that? So I like to support Feel It On the First. It was an incredible movement by a breast cancer thriver who passed away last year. But basically, you're going to look at, it's as simple as looking at your breasts in the mirror each month, making sure that there's no changes, skin dimpling, rashes that you never noticed. There's no nipple inversion, you know, so just getting familiar with your breasts. And then you're actually going to touch your breasts again. You know, ideally, you would do this in the shower and, you know, using 3 fingers in a circular motion. But again, just really just getting to know your breasts, making sure you don't forget the armpit and the clavicle, making sure to get the nipple area, squeezing your nipple, to make sure there's no discharge, like especially bloody nipple discharge would be concerning. All these things, pain, if it like is persistent and just focal. Again, all these things are just signs that something's going on. If you're worried about it all, you know, you always bring it to the attention of your doctor. But I do think it's reasonable to always, you know, ask your doctor, how do you know it's not breast cancer? Are there any imaging tests that we could order to make sure it's not breast cancer? Because again, we know, you know, medical gaslighting is a thing. A lot of people are told falsely that they're too young to get breast cancer, which is not true. You know, it's probably not breast cancer, but like, again, just what, there's no harm in evaluating it with the appropriate imaging studies, you know, because again, knowledge is power. We don't want to dismiss anyone's symptoms without working it up appropriately.
Yes, the medical gaslighting for sure. I'm very curious, when you're talking about changes in the breast or discharge, even just the palpable changes, right? It kind of brings me to my thought to very hormonal states, like pregnancy and breastfeeding stages, right? If someone does a self-breast exam during pregnancy or, let's say, during breastfeeding period, how would one differentiate between oh, it's just because of pregnancy or breastfeeding versus, oh, this might be breast cancer?
Well, I think that's a $1 million question. And it's important to point out that breast cancer is the most common cancer during pregnancy and breastfeeding. So as much as lactational changes are a thing and your breast is undergoing, you know, normal hormonal changes, if something is growing, getting bigger, harder, firmer, just not going away and not, you know, then we have to evaluate it. We usually start with an ultrasound in a pregnant patient or breastfeeding patient, even though mammogram is safe in a pregnant or breastfeeding patient. We could talk about a little bit how to optimize that. But, you know, often we will start with an ultrasound. But I just think it's important that, you know, if a pregnant or breastfeeding woman feels that change, you know, this is for any person, actually. They pay attention to it over the next few days and making sure it's not getting larger, bigger, harder, firmer, things like that. Again, always bring it to the attention of your doctor and let them feel it, see how worried they are based on clinical exam. But I do think it's within everyone's right to say, how do you know it's just a clogged duct? Is there any imaging test that we can do to make sure it's not breast cancer? Because that is what a lot of women are told, and we don't know that without looking at it. Putting an ultrasound on it is usually very definitive as to whether it's something to be worried about or not. So, you know, listening to our patients and taking their concerns seriously. Yeah,
definitely. You know, we talk a lot about women's imaging and also diseases like pregnancy and, you know, lactation. Let's talk about the men. Can men get breast cancer? You know, I think this is something, even when I was younger, I keep wondering, wait, can men also get breast cancer?
Yes, Chris, men can get breast cancer. Beyonce's dad had breast cancer. One of the KISS members had breast cancer. I think it's about 1 in 850 men. So it's not common, but it accounts for about 1% of breast cancer. We are seeing it in younger men as well. So, you know, most commonly in men, when a man presents with a complaint, it's usually gynecomastia. But again, it's not always, and it's pretty easy to decide if it's anything to worry about with a mammogram starting at age 25, if they have a lump, and then maybe doing an ultrasound or starting with an ultrasound under age 25. But yes, men can get mammograms too.
There we go, everybody.
And actually, some high-risk men are actually screened with mammography now. That's one of the newer recommendations. So.
Got it. As with any organ in the body, cancer is not just the only issue that can arise, right? As someone who sees so many images of breasts, I guess, the whole day, for sure, cancer is not the only thing you see. I wanted to ask, beyond cancer, what would you like the general public to know about breast health in general?
Yeah, I mean, breast health is something that I think a lot of people don't realize that most doctors and most healthcare practitioners are not trained in breast cancer. It's not something you learn in med school. It's not really a rotation or a class. So I think people falsely assume that their OBGYN is really in charge of their breast health. And I'm going to say that they're probably not. You know, most OBGYNs are not familiar with all the up-to-date breast imaging studies. So that's why I think it's important that, you know, you follow the boobie docs and you listen to what, you know, breast health is important. I think we really need to talk about just breast health in general, as opposed to breast cancer awareness month, which comes around, you know, once a year. I think breast cancer awareness should be all year round. And it's something that we need to be talking about openly. I think people are still uncomfortable with the word boobs, talking about breasts, it makes people uncomfortable. So, you know, just getting comfortable, as long as we're having the conversation, I think that's what's important.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the things that are uncomfortable to talk about are the things that should be talked about, right? Because when things are taboo, that's where misinformation arises. Because there's fear or discomfort talking about it. It's like the most important information, the life-saving information, are not disseminated. They're not covered or not talked about, right? And I think that's what's so amazing with the platform we have created, the Boobie Docs. Like, aside from, you know, saving people's lives through early detection, from reading images, you're actually really like sharing that life-saving material online, the Boobie Docs. What is your main goal, or what is your future goal for this just beautiful platform?
Thank you so much. And I'm really so proud of my platform because it really speaks. I know that about 10% of people get their information on social media. That number is going to grow as more people, you know, the generations get younger and more people are on social media. And I think my ultimate goal is, you know, I just want to get this message to as many people as mm-hmm. needed. Like there's lots of breast cancer disparities out there. So always growing my platform, growing my podcast, and I'm really, I really want to write a book this year. I know it's like, I know I've written it in my head. Mm-hmm. I've written a lot of it and I just need to get it out because I just think that this has a possibility to really get this information out to people who need it.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to tie that to one of my last questions, I guess more of a scenario, a woman, someone in the world just got the most horrific and heartbreaking news from their breast radiologist that, oh, this might be something that's really, really worrisome. What would be your message to that person who's going through probably one of the darkest days of their life?
The only way out is through. Mm-hmm. You're going to get through this stronger. I think that you're going to get stronger through this. You just have to have the right attitude. You know, this is, you can't control what's happening, but you can control how you react. And so, you know, attitude is everything. Getting a support network in place is really important, and asking people for what you need specifically. Like, could you pick up my child at daycare? You know, sending meals is important. You know, trying, like, I know a lot of times people in the community will send meal trains. I think that's really helpful. But I always tell people it's going to be a really hard year, but you're going to get through this. You're going to get stronger and you're going to look back on this and know why you went through this and how much you've changed.
Yeah, sure.
I think, right, there's a life before breast cancer and there's a life after breast cancer. And just, I think a lot of people reevaluate where they are in their lives and where they want to go and, you know, use the opportunity to find purpose and meaning.
Yeah. I love that. That was so beautiful. You know, we talk a lot about so much educational information, but we also talk a lot about so many heavy and heartbreaking topics, right? Mm-hmm. And we touch upon how your response to this, right, is when you see that horrific or probably worrisome imaging and then saying it to the patient. How do you decompress out of all of this?
I do a terrible job of decompressing. Like I'm on all the time. What I know I need to be doing more is exercising and meditation. I have a really busy mind. I actually just got diagnosed within the past year with ADHD, which I think is interesting. I've learned that a lot of successful women in their 40s and are being diagnosed with ADHD later in life because we were just overlooked, right? We were able to get through with things until it caught up with us. And now we have 3 kids and a career. We're like, how did we end up here?
Yeah.
So trying to stay grounded is important. And, you know, obviously my kids are everything. I have 3 kids and really trying to compartmentalize my mom time from my screen time, from my work time. You know, I think that's a constant challenge, but something I'm working on.
Love it. Yeah. Dr. Roth, I've learned so much. I feel like my brain is like, and these are information that really are distorted online. I mean, we just have to say it like that, right? Like, it's just distorted, and most of the information online are not coming from actual educated and trained experts who see imaging all day, right? And so it's such an honor to just have you on. And beyond all the education information, it's just so beautiful to see your heart in just this field. And it's such a, I feel like it's a world of, it's just a double-edged sword, right? There's so much beauty in it, but also so much brokenness and also fear, and you encapsulate all of that in such a so much passion. So
thank you. I hope people that follow me, you know, if they don't learn something, that maybe they'll come for a laugh or just feel like they have a friend in their corner. So thank you so much
that.
For spending time with me.
I can't wait for everyone else to hear this episode. Yeah.
Somebody was asking really quickly how they knew if their nipple flatness was abnormal. But like, if something's a change for you, that's, you know, when to pay attention to something. So your nipples can be inverted your whole life. But if it's new for you, that's concerning. So just wanted to throw that out.
Got it. And please follow the Boobie Dogs for more of this life.
The breast information.
More of the breast. Information. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great night. Bye.
Bye.